David Canhill proposed the next topic. I thought it would be particularly interesting and useful for members of ours who are themselves trying to figure out how to put their collections onto a computer, and that his presentation would speak not only of his use of the computerization of the records of his business, but also would be applicable to, in some ways, to home usage as well. David Canfield received the MM and DM degrees in music composition from Indiana University and is an active composer. He's also proprietor of Ars Antiqua, one of the largest mail order businesses in existence for use in out of print classical records. Mr. Canfield also owns Enharmonic Records, a label devoted to issuing contemporary music never before recorded. He has rather masochistically brought with him his entire computer system,
not the entire one,
and it's being in the process of being set up, and will continue to be set up as he speaks to you on the computerization of classical records for mail order business. David Canfield.
It's a pleasure to be once again at my second ARS convention. A few years back, I had the pleasure of attending the Bowling Green conference, and at that time gave a presentation on cats in music, which was perhaps a little bit on the frivolous side, but I hope to remedy that today by being a little bit more sober, being as how I'm going to be speaking about something which directly relates to my means of making a livelihood. And while we're getting set up, I'll say a few introductory remarks. If I can find my notes, which are right here. I began Ars Antiqua about 9 years ago, and for the last 5 years it's been a full-time occupation for me. I've had no other source of income, nor for that matter time, to try to pursue even the composition career that I would like to, because it is more than a full-time business. We publish 12 lists a year. I brought some samples along with me for anybody who wants to grab a copy later on. There's only a limited number here, but while they last, you're free to take a copy. And so these come out once a month, and we sell records to currently around 800 records in about 25 different countries. And I run the business out of my home. I think that any given moment we generally have in stock in the order of 30,000 records. Our stock is constantly fluctuating, so that it varies up and down a little bit from time to time. But given all these things, and I might mention too that each of these lists typically contains between 2,000 and 3,000 records. This latest list, in fact, has 3,700 items in it, which is the largest list I've ever published to date. And if indeed I can get time to put all the records that I currently have and new records in stock for the next list, it will even be bigger than this one. So given all these things, I think it's pretty obvious that computerization is something that's not only desirable, but almost a necessity for this kind of a business. The program has been written by my colleague and associate, Brooks Bushnell, who is still setting up here. How are we coming along here?
We're missing a cord.
We're missing a cord.
Yeah.
Okay.
Major or minor?
the lost chord.
Sir Arthur Sullivan.
Which chord are we missing?
The power chord.
The power chord. It's not in there. Well, we may not have a demonstration today of the computer itself, but we will have this set up in our room, and after 8 or 8:30 tonight and tomorrow night, anyone who's interested in seeing the program demonstrated on the computer can come to our room. We'll have it set up and running if we don't get it running today. But I would like to talk about what it will do. The program was begun in August of 1985, and Brooks has spent a lot of his spare time, in fact over 750 hours of programming time have gone into this program to date, and we're still working on it. And which averages out to about 9 hours a week on his part. The format and the features of the program have evolved gradually from the beginning. When I first started thinking about what I would like a computer program to do, I was really not versed at all in computers, and I really had no conception of the ramifications of the computerization process. But as we've worked on it, I began to see more and more things that I was doing on a regular basis that the computer could do for me and save me time. So, and we're in fact still working on it and upgrading it, even as we're almost well.
Unless he has a cord, we aren't going to be able
to. Okay. Well.
So,
all right.
Just go ahead.
I guess we left the cord at the place where we stayed last night, but we can retrieve that and get it set up in our room. The system that I'm using consists of an MPAC AT compatible computer with a 40 megabyte hard disk in it, two dual floppy drives, and a Mitsuba monitor, and then the Panasonic printer that we have here is on loan. I have two printers at home currently, and as you'll see later, the program is designed to send particular tasks to particular printers, depending on what we want to print out. The 40 megabyte hard disk has the capability of storing approximately, more than 100,000 records. We have 35,000 records in the archive so far, which have been put in approximately 2,000 or 3,000 a month as I've been designing compiling my catalogs, and each list then adds a few more thousand records to the archive. So it's been in effect for about a year and a quarter now, and so that's 35,000 records worth, and so we have enough expansion to last us with this system for another about 2 years, I'd say. What I'd like to do in the routine is to go through, let me get some idea of the time here. First tell you what I do on a regular monthly basis in putting out my catalogs. And I should stress that this program has been designed with my particular business in mind. I haven't designed it with collectors particularly in mind, although many applications would certainly be appropriate for individual collections. I have to confess that even my personal record collection, which is about 8,000 records in size, is not on the computer. I simply have had no time to put it on. I would like to get it on computer someday to find out what I have, but that project will probably be some years off because I'm just too busy to take the time to enter all the records in. The first thing that we did in this program was to get our mailing list onto the computer, and we enter the following information, and we put customer's name, and then we have a field which indicates status. A 1 in the status field means that the person will get a preview copy of the list, which is usually sent out about a week in advance of the other list. The reason for this is that I have to send the overseas and the Canadian customers their list about a week in advance, otherwise they would have no chance at all to get any of the records, or very little chance, unless they're one of the fortunate few who collects records that nobody else does, which very few people seem to do. Then I have the second code that would go into that field would be a number 2. A number 2 would be a temporary advance. The temporary advance would be also a preview copy of the list, which would be sent to those who had struck out on the previous list, which would give some, there are people in the United States, obviously, that have chronically slow mail service. So at least in this way, every other list, someone with a bad mail delivery would have a chance to do better. And then with no code in the status field, then that would be a regular list, and they would be sent out with the bulk of the list. Then we have the next field would be a field for U.S. mail. We just put a T or an F in it. If it has a T, the shipping labels, which I'll talk about a little bit later, are coded to be sent out via U.S. mail. If an F is in it, then they would be sent out UPS. Then we put the address in for the customer's list. We have a field for home and work phone numbers in case I need to contact people about their orders. We have a field for their shipping address if it is different from their mailing address, so that packages can be sent to another address if necessary. And then we have spaces for two credit cards with the expiration dates. The next part of the monthly process, of course, I have to go out and find the records and grade them and categorize them and alphabetize them. So far, I haven't been able to think of any way to get the computer to do these tasks. If anybody has any ideas, let me know. The grading, of course, is a part of the program, but the actual taking the record out of the jacket, looking at it, and determining the grade is not something that can even be done with an optical scanner, to my knowledge. Maybe someday somebody will invent something. Okay, then at that point, everything's on the shelf in the order in which it will appear on the list. I take a crate of records at a time, bring them over to my computer, and enter them in the computer one by one. The information is entered in the following order. The grade goes in first, the label, prefix, and record number. And then I enter the description. The description field will hold, 240 characters, I believe? Yes. Which is enough for 99.9% of all records to fit in very comfortably. And then I have a comment field, which is somewhat shorter than that. The comment field contains any descriptions which would pertain only to that particular copy of the record. If there was a cover water damage, or it was a cutout, or anything about the record that is not common to every copy of that particular record. The comment field is not stored permanently in the archive, since presumably if the record sells, the next copy of the record that I come across will probably not have that same characteristic. The next field contains the status of the record. I can sell records on three levels. Most of the records I sell are the norm, what I call the normal status, and that is records that I have one of a kind. Since I deal in used and out of print records, the vast majority are things that I only have one copy of. I do have the capability of offering, if I come across a whole cache of the same record, I can just list it once in the computer and change the status field to U for unlimited, and that way when someone buys the record, it will not put a customer account into the buyer field, and the record thus can be sold as many times as I have requests for it. Then the third status possibility is auction, and although I'm not primarily an auction dealer, I have done few things with the auction, primarily in Vocal 78s. When I get occasionally a very good collection, I like to offer them that way, since my knowledge of that kind of record is not really good enough to assign prices realistically. So in the auction field, instead of confirming the availability of the record, obviously the computer will just allow to enter a bid. I'll talk about that a little bit more when the time comes. Now, the first four fields, as you recall, were grade, label, prefix, and record number. When those four fields are filled up and I hit return to enter that information, the computer does an automatic archive search to see if I've ever had a copy of that particular record before. If it finds a copy, it will automatically print or put on the screen the remaining fields corresponding to the previous copy I've had. And it will even put a price in the price column according to, I don't believe I said the other fields, come to think of it. Okay, I'm sorry, I got ahead of myself here a little bit. Okay, after the status field, we have a mode field, which contains an asterisk referring to stereo, an E, which is electronic stereo, a D for digital, or no symbol would be mono. And then the next field is number of discs in the set. The default status of that field is 1, and I can overwrite that if there are more than one record in the set. The last field is price. Okay, so all of those last fields are automatically completed by the computer if it finds a record in the archive, something that I've had before. And that happens fairly frequently. And obviously that saves a lot of time in entering data into the computer. The price is determined on a formula that I have come up with. It will compare the new grade to the old grade. I use a grading system consisting of letters A, B, C, and D with pluses and minuses. For the purposes of pricing, the pluses and minuses are ignored. So that we consider A to be an excellent copy, a mint copy of a record, that is 100%. If I had a mint copy of a record on one list and I turn up another copy in B condition, the B copy will be priced at 75%, rounded off to the nearest dollar of what the A copy was the last time, if all other things are equal, and I'll get to that in a minute. A B copy is a very good copy that will have a few superficial marks on it, no scratches which can be felt by fingernail. A C copy would have minor scratches and slight surface noise, but would still be good records. These are automatically priced at 50% of an A copy. And then a D copy would be a record with moderate wear, but something which would still play through. You would just have some additional surface noise and pops and ticks from perhaps from scratches. A D copy would be 25%. Those figures I picked out somewhat arbitrarily. For certain records, such as your audio file material, a C copy, for instance, would be worth much less than 50% of an A copy. But I can overwrite, if the computer assigns a grade, I can overwrite that and assign a grade, whatever price I would like. The demand is also taken into account when it's pricing records, so that if the record did not sell, or if I only had one request for it, the price is automatically dropped for the next copy, presuming the grade is the same, by 20%. The theory is that if the record did sell, but nobody else requested it, then I assume that I have to drop the price a little bit to get someone else interested in selling it. 2 to 4 requests, the price remains the same. 5 to 7 requests increases by 25%, and so on and so forth. If I have more than one copy of the same record, but not enough that I can offer the record on an unlimited status, then the computer has the capability of duplicating an item, and it will compare. If I have 2 copies of the same record in different conditions, it will take into account the difference in condition when it prices the second copy. All right. After all the items have been entered into the computer, I might back up here a little bit. Some people wonder what I do with the unsold records from a particular list. We don't repeat them from one list directly to the next list, but after about a year, I have the capability of breaking a previous list down, and all of the records that remain unsold at that point are renumbered and priced, and repriced, dropping the price by 25%, and then they can be inserted in any block of numbers on the list that I choose. So after all that is done, I have a word processor which will put the list in its final format, because the order in which the items appear in here is not the same as the order in which I'm entering the information into the computer, so it has to be shuffled around to get into that format. Currently, we are having our list typeset. We, in the near future, are going to be using a laser printer to save me a rather hefty typesetting charge every month. And I think the quality of the print will be very, very close to what we're getting with typesetting. The next step in the process is to print out stickers for the record. Let me just draw up quickly what we have here. This is your regular 15/16 by I think it's 3-inch sticker. We have a dotted line which prints down the middle so that we can basically divide it into halves and get to 2 record stickers for each of these big mailing labels. And on the sticker we have the following information: list number, which would be the same. Then the grade, I believe, is next. And then the price. And then an identification number, which is the same as the record number itself. Columbia ML4000, we'll just print out 4000. This is to ensure that we get the correct sticker on the particular record we're putting on. And then whatever number here, okay, would be the next item. And then the item number on our list prints out vertically like this. 123, 124, and we score this part here, and then we can peel off these halves separately. And actually, there's a little bit more margin here, and here a little more space here. And then these stickers can be removed and wrapped around the spine of the record, so that the item number appears on the spine, and the records can be very easily located on the shelf when we're filling orders. This saves us countless hours of filling orders. And it helps ensure accuracy in the filling of the orders, too. These stickers are a special kind of stickers that are removable so that they don't take off your record jacket when the collector might want to take them off. In the old days, pre-computer, this stickering job, I used to use a labeling gun to do all the stickering. This used to be a 2 to 3 day job for a 2,000 record list. Now the job is down to about 4 to 5 hours to do this entire process. So then we print our list up using offset printing, and then it's a case of mailing them out to our customers. The mailing labels are printed out according to the status I talked about before: advance, temporary advance, and regular. In the order processing, the customer's account number or the name, if the account number is not known by the customer — most of my customers have learned their account numbers by now — is entered into the computer that calls their name up on the screen, and immediately I will see a couple of things. I will see the list number of the current list, and that can be changed to any list that I want it to show up as. I will see whether they owe us any money. I will see whether we owe them any money or if they have credit on our list, and I will also see if there's an expired charge card on file. The computer will check the date and match it up to the current date. That will remind me to ask them for a new expiration date if they want to charge that order. So then we just enter into the computer the item numbers of the things they would like, and the computer will say available or sold. If in either case, it will display the description of the record along with the price and the grade to make sure that we have gotten the right item on the screen, because sometimes it's easy to mistake a 1564 for a 1654, especially if you're taking a message off a phone or an answering machine. If the requested item is available, we can either enter it as a request for them, or we can bypass it if they say, well, I guess I don't really want that. They just want to see if it's available. If it's sold, then the computer will automatically check the archive to see if there are any unsold copies of the same record. This feature has saved us, or made us, about $4,000 in the first 15 months that I've been computerized over what I otherwise would have sold, because with that many records in stock, I can't simply remember whether I have other copies of a lot of these records. So the sold copy can be adjusted in price, because it will usually appear at a higher price, and it's always my policy, if anything turns up at a higher price in the same or better condition, I will reduce it to the same price of the item that's in the current catalog. And I also can — they can order items that are not on the list. If I've gotten something in that I think a customer would be interested in, I have a capability of entering that information too, and selling things that are not on the list. Okay, then when the order is completed, the computer will display the entire order on the screen and will give me a subtotal. Some people will like to know how much they've spent, and if they haven't spent their quota for the month, then they'll give me a few more numbers. Or they'll start moaning how their wife is going to kill them this month or whatever. I have some people who, in fact, have me send their records to a different address. I'm sure there are a few sympathetic souls to that state there. Then the next screen will show us the shipping menu charges. It has a menu, two sets of alternative shipping methods. The first on the top are for orders which are to be charged, and the second ones are for orders which are to be sent by payment of check or whatever. And then we can send by UPS, US mail. We have different shipping charges for the various options. So the computer automatically calculates these particular charges. And it also applies any sales tax that would be applicable to in-state sales. The next screen allows us to enter a payment. If someone has not phoned in but sent an order in with a check, then we can enter that check in, the amount of that check, and their account is automatically credited for that money right then and there. And then the final screen before the printout of the order has a comment field so that I can put a message to remind me to do something. In the case of orders taking off answering machines, I will say notify or send with other order if they've submitted a second order or whatever. And then the sales slips, which it's not going to be easy to see in the back of the room, but I'll hold one up, looks like this. They're duplicates with a white and yellow copy. The customer will get the yellow copy, and the order is filled from the yellow copy, and then we retain this in our files so that we can double check if any questions arise about the order. It adds the subtotal and everything here. I'm running out of time, and I'm not running out of programs, so I've got to hurry. I'm going to skip the payment procedure, except to say that the computer will keep track of all the payments submitted, and the customer's accounts can be kept current. I can enter in credits, debits, or whatever. The shipping of orders, the shipping labels can be printed out as the orders are paid for, and the shipping labels will be the ones used directly onto the packages, and even the UPS zone is printed on the label, so we don't have to look that up. The computer can also deal with returned records and like things like that, so I'm going to skip that. Now, it has a number of interesting non-routine capabilities that I want to briefly touch on. We can do a search for items in stock by record label and number. So we're going to demonstrate that to you, to ask somebody to give me a classical record that was, you know, perhaps in stock, and we're going to just search it and see if we had a copy in our archive. So that is very helpful if somebody calls me up. We're working on a way to do that by character string so that I could enter Beethoven Symphony No. 5 and it would find any Beethoven 5th that was there. It will do a customer count so we know how many customers are on the mailing list at any given time, so I know how many lists to print. It can tally the outstanding debits and credits, so I know how much money is still owed me. And if I can pay bills with any confidence that month, how much is in credit? You know, how much is the total amount of credit with us? And it can do list calculations. This is the one I really wish we had the system operating right now, because it will tally up all of the sales from a given list, the number of items sold, the requests, the numbers of requests of items that I could not fill, and the dollar amount of the items that I could not fill. And it will also total the dollar amount of the entire list so that I can predict ahead of time whether it's going to be a good month or a lean month as far as putting money in my own bank account goes. It's a very useful thing to be able to plan that way. And just, yeah, I'm wrapping it up. One of the other features is that we can delete and undelete customers. The program will automatically prompt me if somebody hasn't bought or tried to buy unsuccessfully for 6 months. The computer will put their name on the screen, and I can elect to delete them or not if the depending on a number of factors. And we can also print out lists of customers and account numbers. We can print out list of customers, addresses, phone numbers, and charge cards. Just for reference purposes, I've got these lists here. This is our account number list. This is our customer list with mailing addresses and all. And then the last thing that I would like to talk about is the buying guide. And the archive I've had printed out into one form, which I've had reduced and backsided here. so that it would be as compact as possible. There are about 25 or 30,000 records right here, and these are listed numerically by label, alphabetically by label, and then numerically by number. And this guide I take with me and have accessible so that if I'm in a used record store and I can't remember if I need another copy of Janigro playing the Beethoven sonatas on Westminster or something, I just look up that in the field and it will say the description here. It will tell me the list number and the item number that it was last on. It will give me the grade of the last copy I had, and it will have the price here, and then it will have a figure here which is a minus or a plus number or a zero. A minus one means that I didn't sell the last copy I had, so I probably don't need another one. A zero means that I sold it, but I didn't have any requests beyond the copy I had to sell. And then a positive number here, like this three, is the number of requests beyond the copy that I had to sell, so that I can probably want to buy the record if I got any decent price out of it. So that's it in a nutshell. The buying guide I hope to eventually evolve into a price guide, which will obviously never be comprehensive or complete, but at least will give some people an idea of what a lot of classical records are worth. So to see the computer in operation, we are in room.
Let's just write it on the board.
Why don't we do that? Yes.
He can go ahead and talk.
Yeah. Is there any chalk?
Why don't you announce the room number?
Okay. Our room number is 517 over in the, wherever it is we're all staying.
Thurston,
okay. I expect to be back there by 8 or 8:30 tonight, so anybody who would like to come can meet with Brooks and me, and we'll show you the system as it's set up. Thanks a lot. I'm sorry we had to rush so much.